Welcome to Disrespect, exploring the stigma around disability, providing information and interviews to entertain and challenge you who may care about or care for or have become someone with a disability. Disrespect welcomes self-titled poor people's lawyer Sarah Chartall to discuss her firm's class action against the Ontario government for delays and shortfalls in Ontario disability support.
Do you remember Jack Layton making the declaration that the Martin government
caused homelessness? He's right, they did.
People are dying, too, and he said, and newspapers of all stripes ridiculed him for that, and yet you've made the same statement.
I made exactly the same statement. I've had this argument, actually, with folks in various social circles.
But you documented...
Right, he just had the wrong...
You documented the deaths, didn't you?
Yeah, but he also had the wrong focus. They didn't do it by cutting public housing.
Again?
They did it by changing the sick benefit program from UIC to EI.
Oh.
And the problem, for the way we look at this, is that if you don't look at the right thing, then you get the wrong answer.
Right. Yeah, for sure.
Right. And once you see the question,
mm-hmm.
then it all becomes very sensible, and it becomes a very upfront question.
Right.
But as long as you don't see it...
Yeah, you don't see the answer if you don't see the question.
All right, ask the wrong question, get the wrong answer.
So I understand there was a class action against OESP.
Yep. Well, we started the class action several months before the Ombudsman's report came out.
Who's we? You and Roach Schwartz?
Roach Schwartz and Associates.
All right.
Me and my friends.
Okay.
And what it came down to is that I have been working with homeless folks with disabilities since 1999, and since 1999, I've been tracking the wait list time.
This isn't a public list either, is it?
Well, no. But you can call and they'll tell you roughly.
Okay.
I mean, essentially, what you're looking at, it's not the local office. How much of the detail do you actually want to listen to? The rest of what I'm going to say is not going to make a whole lot of sense unless you understand some of the basic sort of administrative design of the system.
Yeah, okay. Go for it.
There are two sets of decisions for ODSP that need to be made.
Yeah?
ODSP is only allowed, the Ontario Disability Support Program, unlike Canada Pension or Workers' Comp, which has different questions, ask two basic questions. One, are you really poor? And two, are you severely disabled, and are you expected to be severely disabled?
For a long time.
For a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Both. So it's the medical questions and the financial questions.
Right.
When they set up the administrative process, like who decides what?
Yeah.
The who decides what question is the local ODSP. There are local ODSP offices that are all over the province.
Yeah.
Tens of them, if not hundreds of them.
Yeah.
Okay? They make what are called the financial determinations. They decide if you're poor enough.
Yeah.
Then you have the other decision, which is the medical decision. Are you sick enough?
Yeah.
The are you sick enough question is made by something called the Disability Adjudication Unit.
Yes.
The DAU, which is a centralized office. All of the applications, everybody's questions from all over the province of Ontario go to one office.
Mm-hmm.
That office decides all the questions about medical stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's the Great Wall of China between the DAU and the mm-hmm. local ODSP offices.
Mm-hmm.
The general argument is to preserve people's privacy. None of the medical stuff ever gets sent to the local office.
Yeah.
Local office knows that somebody has been determined to be disabled, has no idea why. But where the backlog occurs, let's look across it. I'm a person with disability. I'm on Ontario Works, or I walk into an ODSP office and say, I'm a really poor person with disabilities. I need an ODSP application form. Let's start with that's the first problem.
Mm-hmm.
You can't get these forms online.
Mm-hmm.
You can't get them in a drugstore.
Mm-hmm.
Your doctor doesn't have a bunch of them. You have to actually go and ask for them.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so
Interesting.
But step number one, you go and it's the getting of the forms.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a whole set of problems involved in the getting of the forms, but let's assume you jump through those hoops.
Mm-hmm.
You have successfully jumped through those hoops. You have the application forms, which are known as the Disability Determination Package, DDP. Okay?
Okay.
You have the DDP. It's got all kinds of questions in the DDP. Okay. You're given 90 days to fill those in. Okay? They say you've got 90 days. You've got to go out and get them filled in. Let's talk, even before, about whether or not they get through. Let's talk about a couple of basic problems.
Mm-hmm.
That presupposes a whole bunch of things. Let's not even begin to look at the obvious question of whether or not you're capable of making those kinds of presentations. You're comfortable going in. You can ask somebody and say, I'm disabled. I really need those forms. I really need to make an application.
Yeah.
The other question is, have you got a doctor?
Yeah, that's true.
Is there anybody around you who's even willing to fill in the forms?
Yeah,
And what do you do if you don't have a doctor?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's, you know, the whole question, getting the forms, getting them filled in, and then getting all that done within 90 days.
Yeah, or you don't have a doctor who knows your history well enough to be comfortable, or...
Oh, you begin to see the problems. I mean, it's layer on layer on layer on layer, but we're not even at the beginning of the wait time yet.
Yeah.
Let's go to the next step. Let's assume...
Mm-hmm.
That you do have a doctor, and you did get the doctor to fill them, good, bad, indifferent, however they filled them, they filled them in. They then get mailed.
Yeah.
Right? That's the way they get, you know, 99% of them are delivered by mail.
Mm-hmm.
To the secret office in Toronto. So you take the secret forms.
Right.
Which are not publicly available.
Mm-hmm.
And you take the secret forms, and you deliver the secret forms to the secret P.O. box.
Mm-hmm.
Which is for the secret office in Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All the forms that come in, we know from the ombudsman who actually got these through his research, in the course of 10 months, it's about 29,000.
29,000 forms?
Yeah.
Okay.
29,000 applications. They all get date stamped.
Right.
Right? The other thing to remember, we also know from earlier work that's been done by Legal Aid and confirmed by the provinces, this is not secret, that only 40% of the people who are given forms
mm-hmm.
actually get them filled in and send them in.
Who?
You know, there's a question of why we've got a program where only 40% of the people who've already been determined to be poor, because that's the only way you get the forms.
All right.
Like,
so
it's not like these are public forms, right? You have to be poor before they give them to you. That's financial determination. That's
okay.
How this administrative process is set up.
Is that the phone interview?
Sometimes it's by phone, sometimes it's in person, depends on where, depends on what you're on, different ways, different programs, different people.
All right.
But it is the financial decision. It's made by the local office.
Right.
You're poor enough, they give you the forms.
Right.
So only 40% of the people who were poor enough to get the forms
mm-hmm.
actually send them in.
Mm-hmm.
Now, at the point at which they get sent in, they get date stamped.
Mm-hmm.
Right? All of them get date stamped.
Mm-hmm.
Step number one. Step number two, somebody actually takes a very brief review and looks at each of the forms. That's called triage, right?
Yep.
Now, we know that a very small number of applications get either allowed or denied a triage.
Get either allowed or?
Or denied.
Oh.
I mean, for example, I had one case that got denied a triage, so somebody got an answer very quickly. The doctor hadn't put anything in the forms.
He sent them in blank.
Yes.
I thought triage was supposed to move things along. Okay.
Well, it does. It takes those claims off the top of the pile when they first come in that are so clear there's absolutely no question. So the person with the open, glaring wounds who's writing from a hospital gets allowed instantly, and the doctor who put nothing in the forms at all
gets disqualified
instantly, and the person gets a letter within about 6 weeks, one way or another. That is actually a very small percentage of the total number of claims that are coming in.
What is, the disqualified ones?
No, the ones that make triage, a triage decision one way or another.
What happens to the others?
They go to the wait list.
Oh.
That's where the wait list starts. Then, if you don't make triage, you get put in a long line, and you wait your turn.
Yeah.
Till somebody can read. That wait time has fluctuated historically. Currently, it's running at about 8 to 10 months. until somebody reads them at all.
Oh.
So that result is, you applied in January, it didn't make triage.
Yeah.
If you have to wait 8 months, 9 months, let's say, after triage,
October.
You're really looking at, they're not going to start reading them. Just start reading them until about October.
Yeah.
They're going to make decisions in November.
Yeah.
However, you're limited by statute. That's what generated the Section 17 question to the ombudsman.
Yeah.
You're limited by law to a four-month retroactivity.
Yeah.
It literally means the longer the line, the less money the province pays.
Yeah, yeah. That's clear. Yeah. And that's the heart of the issue at this point.
No, that's heart of one of the issues.
Okay.
That is the heart of the class action.
All right.
Now,
I hear you.
To be very specific, that is not the heart of, the only heart of, I mean, one of the sort of myriad of essential problems involved with ODSP. The class action makes no, you know, we're not silly enough to argue that that's going to solve the problem. It isn't.
Right.
All we're trying to do in the class action is get people paid the retroactivity.
All right.
The class action argues that that process, the process of the longer the line, the less money you get,
mm-hmm.
is systemic discrimination. And in law, the term is called unjust enrichment.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, institutionalized cheating. It's also a violation of basic charter rights. So we're asking for an invalidity of the process, but we're also asking very specifically that people be paid retroactivity back to date of application.
And now for a short break from our interview.
Thank you. self-titled Poor People's Lawyer Sarah Chartall has been discussing her class action against the Ontario government for delays in qualifying for disability benefits.
We know from the public statistics that anywhere between 9 and 10,000 people go on ODSP a year.
Right.
That's roughly the rate of increase. Depends on the year, but it's give or take.
Right.
Let's do, for the purposes of our math, let's assume that since 1997 when the program came in, that we've got roughly 100,000 people who went on ODSP. Right? 100,000.
Right.
Let's assume, because the backlog has fluctuated over time, it's been longer different points, shorter different points, but let's say it averages 6 or 7 months. Let's do 6 because it's easy. Let's also assume, for the purposes of this, that the majority of people are already on Ontario Works.
Right.
The difference between Ontario Works and ODSP is about $500, give or take.
Yeah.
6 months, that's about $3,000.
Right.
So if you go 100,000, it always astounds me when I do the numbers, times 3,000. And that's probably a massive underestimate. Am I right that you get to 300 million?
Yeah, that's what I get, is 300 million. I just got to put the commas in. Like you say, it's a little astonishing.
And that's just the retroactivity.
Yeah.
That's no damages.
Yeah.
And that's just on the ones that are allowed. Now, we've asked in this claim, we've said, not only does the province owe a duty to pay retroactivity back to the date of application for everyone whose claim was allowed.
Yeah.
They also owed a duty to give somebody an answer that the claim is denied within a reasonable amount of time.
Yeah.
So on the ones that were denied and never allowed through appeal or whatever process,
yeah,
we've also asked in you know, now we're talking damage, we're saying you should pay them something minimum like $100 a month.
Yeah.
For every month they had to wait for a decision.
Oh.
And then on top of that, you know, not a huge amount of money. We're talking, we're understanding it's a small payment, it's the right to have an answer.
And it's an incentive to give an answer is what it is.
Right. Just that you have an answer within a time that you could actually do something about it.
Yeah.
Yay or nay. So how do you get on with your life?
Yeah.
If you add in the number of people who've never been given an answer.
Yeah.
At that point, you're looking at probably 20,000 people per year since 1997.
20,000 people who
make applications.
All right. So.
So if you do 20,000 times 9 years.
9 years.
180,000 people.
Yeah. Yeah.
The basic retroactivity is about 300 million.
Mm-hmm.
You pay just a tiny little bit of damages on everybody for every month they had to wait. And then, you know, we said we also wanted some money for the basic violation of charter rights.
Right.
Then you begin to understand why the province is having such a hard time with the problem, with
rectifying this.
Rectifying the problem and with stopping it. Because the moment they stop, then they've got some people that didn't get cheated and other people who did get cheated.
Yeah.
The numbers are staggering.
Well, and they, and on top of that is the cost of distinguishing, isn't it? Because they haven't cared up until now. So they might find it costly to establish even the records.
No, no, that's absolutely not a problem.
No, okay.
They have a complete computer record of everybody.
Okay.
This is all computer-driven.
Okay.
Everybody applies, there's a letter, there's a database. We know exactly for each person who's ever applied. It's the only way you'd get in this system.
So from your point of view, it's not difficult to determine where the money will go. What's difficult is biting the bullet to pay the money.
You got it.
Yeah, okay.
See, this is in law what's called a named class. We know exactly the names of each every. Now, we may not have the address in everyone.
Yeah.
We know their names.
Yeah.
We know their names. We knew where they lived at the point at which they made application.
Yeah.
For everyone who's still getting benefits, we know exactly where they live today.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's a sub-problem for those folks who made application, were denied, and now have moved.
Okay.
Okay, that's a subset of problems.
All right.
But we know who they are.
Yeah.
We know a whole lot about them, because that's part of what goes in the application.
All right.
We know who they are. We know who was the doctor who was seeing them at the point at which they made application. We know what city they lived in. We know their date of birth. We know their social insurance number. We know their education. We know a whole lot about them.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not an extremely complicated test to find them. There's just a lot of them.
Yeah.
Now, the class action was filed before the Ombudsman's report because we saw no other way to try to get people back the money they'd been cheated out of.
Oh.
That
yeah,
was,
okay.
You know, that's, now it's still the same question. The problem is it's a great deal of money.
It's a what?
It's a great deal of money.
Yes.
Now
yes,
it's money that people were cheated out of.
But from your point of view then, this is the answer to the question, what needs to be done?
That is a question of what needs to be done to remedy the damage for these people up to now. But what needs to be done much more broadly than that, there's the short-term answer and the long-term answer.
Right.
The short-term answer is there needs to be people who will help people make application.
Okay.
The long-term answer is, I mean, there are many things that are wrong with this system. We've only just started to touch, as you saw when we were talking. You can then go get into how the forms are written, why the things take so long to make decisions. I mean, there's a whole series of problems. It doesn't take them a year to decide whether or not somebody can get welfare.
Yeah.
They can do that the day somebody comes in.
Yeah. You're saying now that the long-term
solutions? The long-term problem, we need a reexamination of how the system, what kind of system we want, how is this system organized, and, you know, what do we want out of the system that's to do this?
Mm-hmm.
What is a reasonable way to have this kind of a system organized?
Mm-hmm.
And we have a lot of very specific recommendations in the report, and then there's the broad, overwhelming question that says, we need to reconsider how should this kind of a system be run. Who should have to do what for whom?
Okay.
How do we get decisions that make sense and that don't take forever?
Okay, so for people whose eyes may have glazed over at some point in this discussion, how are you going to sum up what you've done, what you're doing, and what the public needs to do?
That's a very broad question.
Well, we're looking for simple answers because we've visited the details.
Okay.
We're not looking for lies.
All right. We're not looking for lies. We're also not looking at you sort of how to say this without people's eyes glazing over yet again.
Well, for people who tried to follow it and failed.
Okay. The real question is how, as a society, do we think we should support people who have the kinds of disabilities that makes it unrealistic to expect them to be able to support themselves through work?
Yeah.
How do we want that program to be run?
Mm-hmm.
What do we think, you know, this, even within the current standard, which there's a whole lot of problems with the current standard, but even within that standard,
mm-hmm.
which says, you know, can this person hand out realistically, be expected to be able,
mm-hmm.
not whether they can get it, but just simply be able to hand out super fitness flyers at the corner of Young and Bloor on Tuesday afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
And if one steps back from, you know, the minutiae of process
mm-hmm.
and says, the minimum that an employer has the right to expect
mm-hmm.
and that I should have the obligation to fulfill is that if I say I'm going to come up on Thursday,
mm-hmm.
I show up on Thursday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If I can't commit to that, if my health is such that I really can't do that,
yeah.
that I might come or I might not come, I might have a day in which I can get up in the morning and actually move myself out of bed,
yeah.
or if I can't sustain the work,
yeah.
then I'm not employable.
Right.
If I'm not employable, then the question is, how should I survive?
Yes. Okay.
Now, in our society, there's a very broad consensus that says that people who are really not employable, not because they don't have skills, not because they're lazy, unpleasant people who don't want to work,
yeah.
but who realistically can't sustain working, not even on a part-time, regular basis, enough so they could actually pay for their room. We're not saying somebody has to be able to work to the ability to have enjoyment out of or to make a full-time, but just enough to pay a room and buy their food.
Yeah.
If they're not well enough to be able to do that on a regular basis, there is, I would submit, an enormous amount of public support that those people should be given enough money by government so so that they don't die on the street. The health crisis should not make you homeless in Canada.
So what we need from the public is simply an explicit expression of this support.
And we need to say a system that does not provide that at the point at which the crisis sets in is unacceptable. In an absolutely minimum level.
Yeah.
And what good is it if you can have a heart attack, have your hospital covered, if you lose your housing because you have no money to pay the rent once you're discharged? But this country is rich enough and developed enough and all of the other that we should be able to say that people don't die on the street because of a health crisis.
Yeah. Lawyer Sarah Chartal to discuss denial by process in ODSP and the class action lawsuit launched by her firm.
That's right.
Thanks very much.
Okay.
All right.
Talk to you later. Bye.
Bye.
In the middle of the show, you heard Sammy Price and Boogie with Big Sid. And coming up, Pete Johnson and Albert Ammons, Sixth Avenue Express, both from the Encyclopedia of Boogie Woogie. You can now listen to the show wherever you're near an internet download. Disrespect is archived at www.radioforall.net. That's the number four, not the word, radioforall.net. You can find the shows under its name, Disrespect. Tune in at showtime to see if something more topical hasn't displaced the show that we planned. Disrespect is digitally edited from live telephone and studio interviews.